Welcome to episode 4 of Seagull Eagle, the show where two fan bases cling to whatever scraps of optimism we can find, usually just before they're ripped away. This week, things are looking surprisingly more positive. I mean, for now. Palace get a draw at Arsenal and celebrate it like a victory. Brighton snatched a win against West Ham, proving patience really is a virtue.
Oh, and Palace made it to the FA Cup final. I mean, even I can't believe it. But don't worry, I'm preparing myself for heartbreak. So here we are in the studio again, ready to work out if this is the start of an end-of-season surge or just the calm before the storm.
So please, make sure you follow us on socials for more rants, wild predictions and the kind of hope that will probably end in tears.
So let's get into it, Neil, before it all falls apart again.
This is Seagull Eagle. Hello, Andy.
You're right, Neil. Have you had a better week?
I've had quite a better week, yes. How about your week, though?
Oh, it's been a good week. It's been a really good week. Weeks like this actually don't come around very often for a Palace fan.
No, I totally understand, and I can understand your feeling. You must be incredibly excited. I don't want to jump straight into that, though. I understand why you want to jump straight into it, but I think we should go chronologically through how our week's been.
I can contain myself. It's going to be all right. We'll save it for later. We'll work our way up to it. And brilliant. Of course, we've got your review coming as well, haven't we?
Yeah. Well, hello, everyone. Welcome to Seagull Eagle. It's great to have you here. Episode 4. We're underway now, Andy. We're truly rolling with it.
Wow. Episode 4. And we've actually got people listening as well.
I mean, that's scary.
From all over the world.
Yeah. I really appreciate all of the guys that have taken the time to have a listen, that have messaged us. And just don't forget, you can message us on any of our socials as well. We're on Instagram, X, Facebook. Where else are we? Oh, TikTok. We've got a TikTok account.
We've got a TikTok account, yeah.
Love it. Look at us, down with the kids.
It's all happening.
Well, let's go back in time a little bit. Last Tuesday, was it?
It was.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Arsenal against Crystal Palace. How was that for you?
Oh, well, look, a midweek trip to the Emirates is never easy.
No.
Let's be honest, especially not at the moment. So, look, Liverpool fans were gathered to watch to see if they could be crowned champions if Arsenal lost. Even the Liverpool players were watching the game.
Yeah,
altogether.
I heard about that. Yeah, they were ready, weren't they?
They really were. Although I don't think they wanted to win the championship like that.
No, I get your point, but I mean, it's always nice if someone else does it for you to some degree, though.
Yeah. So look, let's get this out of the way. We didn't win. However, it kind of felt like we did.
I saw the celebrations.
Hmm. We were also the better side, I believe, over 90 minutes on their own patch. With one eye on Paris and the other apparently closed, Arsenal stumbled to this 2-2 draw. So I think we put on a show. I really do. And we nearly left with all 3 points. And I'm totally understanding of the fact that this is potentially a biased review. But I do believe we potentially should have won it. So not only did we leave with a point, we also left with possibly William Saliba's dignity too. It was a little bit embarrassing from his part, but we'll get into that. Things didn't start great for us. Inside 3 minutes, we remembered we were playing the Premier League's set-piece masters, and the Arsenal centre-back rose up like a salmon in a balloon factory to loop a header past Dean Henderson. Now, that all happened pretty much before I'd even found the remote and sat down.
Yeah,
that's the
early
truth of the matter.
Was early.
Me and Harry were just getting ourselves ready. We turned it on and watched Arsenal celebrating, is basically what happened. We were already 1-0 down. So then, obviously, I watched the replay. At this point, bearing in mind, and I don't want to dwell on this because last week's podcast was all about doom and gloom and shipping in 10 or 11 goals in a week and all this, it was still in the back of my head. And I was thinking to myself, this could possibly be one of them games. Is it going to be in another embarrassing away day where our goal difference takes an absolute pounding? But never fear, Neil. Never fear, because Ebre Echiese was here. And not just here, he was lurking on the edge of the box. No one near him, locked, loaded, and ready to pounce. I think it was about 25, 27 minutes, he volleyed home a beautifully measured corner from Adam Wharton. A pinged pass, one bounce, two bounces, post, net, goal.
It was a good finish. Well, it was a strange finish, wasn't it? It was one of those you see very few times, but where he hits it and it bounces, and that totally puts off everyone, doesn't it? And so yeah, it was a great try, and it ended up in the back of the net.
Oh, Neil, it was a goal so smooth it should have come with a soundtrack. It was brilliant. It was so good. It was kind of that type of goal that you watch the kids on FIFA scoring. It was just that kind of street football style goal. It was simply brilliant. And in fact, both the goals, what I loved about this game was both the goals that Palace scored against Arsenal were superb.
Yeah, they really were.
Yeah. Then, without kind of dwelling on it too much, we then had a lot of missed chances, actually. Mm. We had a bit more possession, which is unlike us. We could have and should have taken the lead after that. Nketiah, eager to prove himself against his old club, spun and shot, but couldn't beat the opposition. Then Deveni had a golden chance, and how we missed that, I just don't know. Bless him. He's come up from the under-21s team this year. He's got himself, and he keeps getting himself into these wonderful positions in front of goal. And unfortunately, two or three times now, I think the occasion's just got the better of it. And I don't want to bash him because he's doing really, really well. His time will come.
Well, I think that's a good point, though, Andy. I don't watch many Palace games. Yeah. I'm watching more these days, as you can imagine. But I was surprised to see that name, a name that I hadn't really heard of too much. I thought he did all right. You know, he had little flashes here and there. And that moment that you're talking about, at least he got into the place to have that moment. You know, at least he was making those runs. At least he was trying. I thought he was very promising.
He seems to be he seems to be very in favour with Glasner. Mm. And obviously he was in that really successful under-21 team, and he's now come up to the first team, and he's getting given chances, which I love. I love the fact that we've now got a team where people are coming through, because that's what you want to see, right? That's what you want to see. Anyway, at that point, we were dreaming of potentially a deserved lead, in my opinion. And then Trossard went and did that ridiculous thing that he does, that kind of wiggle, shimmy, shoot, deflection, chaos goal thing that he does. 2-1 lead, Arsenal at the break. Harsh? Very, from my perspective. Second half comes, Glasner makes some changes, Saar and Hughes come on for Eze and Wharton. I think a lot of that was due to the fact that obviously the FA Cup was coming, without going into what happened there. However, fresh legs and fresh chaos from my point of view. You bring on Hughes, I mean, there's, you know, chaos and potentially yellow cards flying all over the place. Suddenly, from my perspective, Arsenal were gasping for air. They didn't know quite what to do, and I don't understand how a team of that calibre couldn't deal with it. Again, Deveni got himself in a brilliant position, tipped it over. Gueye came close. Munez nodded a beautiful stealth ball across the box. Saar came flying in, superhero-esque, and inches it was missed by.
It was close. We were
looking really good, Neil.
Yeah.
We were looking really good. I was starting to feel a little bit more confident about the impending FA Cup. And then VAR took a brief break from ruining my weekend to rightly disallow Martinelli's goal. Henderson then, after that, pulled off another worldie save to deny Saka. Henderson is fully on form at the moment and well and truly keeping us in games, which we'll talk about later. At this point, Palace smelt blood. Arsenal just smelt bad. That's where I was at right now. Then the moment came. 87 minutes in, Saliba, under absolutely no stress, served up a hospital pass. Honestly, I think the wonderful thing about this was we were playing a high press, we were giving them no space, and you could see they didn't feel comfortable on the ball. They were nervy.
I think what that moment, that goal, that situation showed, I think, it was a perfect encapsulation of how much Arsenal were distracted, I think.
Yeah.
Like, don't get me wrong, Palace.
Lowe's early Black Friday deals are going fast. Don't miss up to 50% off select major appliances. Plus, up to an extra 25% off when you bundle select major appliances. And with Christmas around the corner, you're going to need more string lights, right? Save $4 on GE LED 100-count string lights, now just $5.98. Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 12/3. Selection varies by location. Select locations only. While supplies last. See Lowe's.com for more details.
collapsed. They actually were really good. But that moment, to watch him, Saliba, wasn't it?
Yeah.
To watch Saliba realise that Mateta's there, take the ball, move away, and then for some reason think, oh, I'll come back now because Mateta's just disappeared. Well, how, what? Like, he just moved one way to get away and then turned back on himself and passed it without really even looking. It was a very strange situation.
Well, it's interesting because in the post-match analysis, Mateta was asked about how he knew he would do that because he was so confident that he was going to pass the ball there. Yeah. And obviously Mateta was sat on the bench for the first, you know, with a majority of the game.
Sure.
And he was sat there watching Saliba and he saw him do that same thing four or five times before. Mm. So he was ready and pouncing. He knew what to do. And there are very few people that are better than Mateta.
Oh, that rhymes.
in that position. And he wriggled like he was dodging pigeons in the park lobbed Raya with perfection. It was just an absolutely astounding goal. So much so, he didn't even look. And wow. I had to watch the replay a few times, Neil, and he didn't. He didn't even look. He knew where the goal was. He knew where the keeper was. Instincts.
Yeah, it's the classic, I think it was Brian Clough that said it first when he was trying to coach his strikers. He says, the goal never moves.
Yeah.
If you get used to knowing where you are on the pitch, the goal never moves. And I thought that was an incredible finish. Incredible finish. Just great awareness. Just showed his intelligence on the pitch, which I thought was very good, to be fair.
And I don't know whether you remember last week's podcast when we were talking about this preview in this game. And
no, I usually fall asleep at that point.
Thank you. But all I wanted was a draw.
Mm.
All I wanted for us to get some confidence and kind of get back onto that bit where we're not shipping in goals, we feel confident in attack. And that game was exactly what I wanted it to be. Arsenal were all over the place at the back. I think their eyes were on Paris. And that's 13 draws this season for them. And obviously their title hopes are toast, and that's obviously old news now because we know that for a fact. For Palace, a proper Wembley warm-up, two screamers, a late equaliser, a tactical performance that was first class from Glasner from my perspective. And we head into the FA Cup semi-final looking sharper than ever, and Villa await. So to conclude, Neil, no, we didn't win, but you can understand why I was chirpy after that performance, because last time when I was at the Emirates for the League Cup, I believe it was, sitting there as an imposter with my friend who was an Arsenal fan.
Did you?
We went, yep.
You went undercover?
I went undercover and... Wow. We went 1-0 up. Mateta scored a brilliant goal. And then I can't remember what the scoreline was. And I think it was 3-1, I think.
Right.
And when they turn it on, Arsenal, there is no stopping them. Luckily, they forgot where the switch was. there we go. At that point, all I was thinking was, bring on Wembley. We're back.
Yeah, totally understandable. It was a good game. It was a good result. I think, ironically, it was probably a good result for both teams.
I agree.
Think Arsenal getting away with a draw, having not played all of their first 11, no injuries, no problems from their perspective. They knew they weren't going to win the league anymore. You got a great point. Two stunning goals put you in a good mood, put the team in a good mood for a more important game, let's be honest, on the weekend. But yeah, well done, Andy.
Thank you, mate. I feel like I played it myself. I was that involved. look, let's talk about Brighton West Ham.
Oh, let's talk about Brighton West Ham. Finally.
Can I just say before you do this?
Yeah, go on.
I was in the bar at Wembley watching the last bits of this game.
Were you? Were you cheering us on?
There was a lot of very happy Palace fans all gathering around Sky Sports News that was playing at Wembley that all went very, very quiet very late on. So tell us why, Neil.
Okay, I'll try not to get too excited. I think a good place to start is the starting 11. And I think it's fair to say that actually going into Saturday, obviously, I wasn't holding out much hope. We haven't been playing great. I was hoping we'd beat West Ham because West Ham have had a terrible season, but still, I wasn't too positive about the outcome. We got to the ground and we got there just in time for the starting 11 to come out on the socials. We had a look and that didn't change my mood, I have to be honest.
What was it?
Well, it was the fact that So if you look at it from back to front, we know we've got a problem at right back still. Veltman and Lamptey were on the bench. So that's great news that they're fit, but they're on the bench. And it's like, well, both of them on the bench? I found that strange for a start. It's like, well, if they're both fit enough to be on the bench, then play one half, one the other half. What's the point?
That is strange.
Anyway, I digress. Our back four had two midfielders and two defenders. So we had Belaba and Wefa, both central defensive midfielders, you would argue. One playing right back, Wefa, one playing centre back again, like he did at the Leicester game at centre back. So that was a little bit of a, you know, a little bit of a problem that I was worried about. Then you look into midfield. Jack Inglewood stayed in midfield. He, you know, he had a pretty good game, an okay game against Brentford. So I was pleased to see him in there. And Yassin Ayari came in, who's been in and out, but, you know, had a pretty good season. But it did look a bit of a lightweight midfield, if you put it that way. You know, two young players that are not particularly powerhouses or anything like that. So I was a bit concerned. But anyway, you know, that's the way that it looked. And then the other concern was on the wings, where, again, Mitoma was fit enough to be on the bench, but not start. So we had Simon Adingra, who has definitely not set the world alight this season. And Solly March, great news for him, actually making his first start in over 18 months.
Is he really?
Since that horrible injury that he had. He's had a few minutes here and there, but this is his first actual start. And I'm just, you know, on a personal level, on a people level, it's really good to see him back playing and getting back to some sort of level of full fitness. If I'm being honest, it was obvious he hadn't started for 18 months, bless him.
Yeah.
You know, he was okay, but he looked like he was, he'd run a marathon by about the hour mark. So, but you know, it was great to see them anyway.
Just to conclude then, Neil, so you were concerned about the lineup.
Yeah.
About defensive, midfield and on the wings. So pretty much what you're saying is that you're happy with who was playing up front.
I was happy with the goalkeeper, or at least until about 65 minutes. I was okay. So game starts and like we normally do, especially at home, there was a little bit of early pressure. We got around the ball, we got around them. It was very clear that West Ham were playing what they've been starting to play the last few weeks, which is a 3-4-3 formation. But you know, when they haven't got the ball, it's much more a five at the back, a defensive counter-attacking sort of view. So there's a back five, then a four, and then a one almost in some respect. Generally speaking, it's a very big wall to try and break through. But you know, we did well. There were some bright moments. When West Ham wanted to, they tried to get out and they had a couple of moments, but still not much going on from an offensive perspective for West Ham. And then 13 minutes in, it was nice and early, thankfully. We had a couple of efforts around the edge of the box. The ball came out. I think it went over to the left-hand side where Simon Adingra and Estupiñán were playing. It basically came out to Yassin Ayari on the edge of the box. Now, nearly everyone in the ground has seen Yassin Ayari this season have quite a few opportunities to score, and he has not scored. He has missed every single one. Over the bar, left of the bar, missed kick, hit a defender, whatever. Yeah. Like, he's had quite a few good opportunities. If you remember back on episode one of this podcast, the Palace-Brighton game, he had the opportunity right at the last seconds to try and salvage a point.
We all know how that went, don't we?
Yeah, we do, yeah. Mm. So it came out to him, and me being the expert at football that I am, as I saw him winding up to take a shot, went, "No!" I was wrong, Andy.
Oh.
I was very, very wrong. So he made what I can only describe as such a beautiful, curled pass into the net. It was a beautiful shot, just curled over round the goalkeeper, over into the top corner. It was such a lovely, you know, caressed finish. We were all a little bit speechless, I have to be honest, and we were jumping up and down, obviously, and very happy for that first 15-20 minutes. And as time went on, I think, you know, that first half was quite comfortable for us. Yassin Ayari, the first ever goal for Albion, sealed that half. And the atmosphere and the Albion players, you know, you could tell it was a positive outlook at that moment. I think all of us were probably thinking, well, you know, we need a second.
It's never too early for Lowe's Black Friday deals. Snag some of our biggest savings of the season right now, like 25% off select pre-lit artificial Christmas trees. And get yourself free select DeWalt, Kobalt, or Craftsman tools when you buy a select battery or combo kit before the Black Friday rush. Because everyone loves free stuff, right? Lowe's, we help you save. Valid through 12/3 while supplies last. Selection varies by location.
You know, like, we never keep a clean sheet. We need a second. And then nearer the end of the half, we did have one opportunity where I think it was Simon Adingra at the end put it in the back of the net, but it was a bit of a melee in the penalty box. But on reflection, when we did score, we all jumped up and then suddenly realised that VAR were looking at it. And
And
it's a right decision, Matt Sweeper.
Yeah, I don't think there was any...
No. It's just obviously when you're in the ground, you're quite not quite sure what's going on.
Of course.
But then when you see the response and you see the offside, it's like, fair enough, you know, that's just the way it is, isn't it? But that took us to half-time and we'd had a good half. At this point, I probably just want to make a special mention to Jack Inisherwood.
Ooh.
I think this performance this week showed us why he's so highly thought of and why he starts in midfield. I think at Albion, he's playing for the England under-21s and they pick him every time at the moment. And it's obvious why his preferred position in midfield. His ability to knit the team together is fantastic. We used to have a player called Pascal Gross.
You did?
Now, I'm not going to say Jack Inisherwood is another Pascal Gross because that is far too...
Quite a statement.
It's far too early in his career. But what I would say is having someone of similar type skills who can play the short passes, make sure that everything works and ticks over, is such a lovely thing to watch sometimes. You know, he's defensively minded, yes, but as soon as he needs to go and try and make a break for it or make an offensive pass or a cross, he's there and he's going for it. There was one particular pass right near the end of the second half when we were looking to try and obviously score goals where he had two West Ham players on him and he didn't have anywhere to go, so we thought. And he somehow managed to do what I could only describe as a golf shot where he chipped the ball with some backspin over some defenders into the corners for Matoma to run onto, and as it landed it backspinned into Matoma's path. It was immense. Anyway, look, I digress. My point being that his ability is fantastic. You know, he rarely makes big Hollywood passes. He's always available to take the ball, and it just really made a difference on that game where we knew we were going to have a lot of the ball.
Yeah.
So I just want to say thank you to Albion for creating a player like Jack Inisherwood. Thank you to Mr. and Mrs. Inisherwood. I'm sure they had something to do with it too. Now, we move into the second half. You can tell I'm getting excited, but this is where my excitement started to wane a little bit. Because lo and behold, it feels like Brentford all again. We start like we've still in the changing room. Honestly, no joke, literally the ball, we kicked off and you could see within the first 30 seconds, it's like, what are we doing? Are we awake? Do we realise we've restarted? It was a very strange first 3 or 4 minutes and topped off by the fact that, you know, West Ham get that little bit of encouragement because they can see we're not on it. And then we just let them literally walk it in. And I mean literally. Fell asleep in the left back area, Bowen straight down to the right touchline, pulls the ball across, and somehow, Mohamed Kudus turns up behind all of our defenders and touches it. I mean, he doesn't whack it. He literally passes it straight to Verbruggen. And I'm thinking, great, he can pick that up. But does he pick it up? No. What he does is he lets it go straight through him. And I mean literally straight through him. It was embarrassing, and it's not the first time that Verbruggen's done this. And there's lots of news stories about how Verbruggen's being watched by all these top teams. Well, he's made a few of these decisions recently where things haven't quite worked out for him. I think we're going to have him for at least one more season, put it that way.
Okay. He's got time to come good.
He has. Now, the good thing is that West Ham were incredibly poor, even though they scored that goal. You know, they bought the German, Füllkrug, on at half-time, and he did make a difference. They tried to attack more. But there wasn't, like, huge waves of attack. They didn't, like, get on to us too much. It was very end-to-end, and we had opportunities, they had opportunities. But nothing really happened too much. Until, that is, we made some substitutions. Solly March, who looked like, as I said, he'd run a marathon, and Simon Adingra, who really hadn't done too much at all, apart from kick a few people and get pushed over. They subbed them and bring on Karu Matoma and Yankuba Minta, our two, what you would have to call, is our first choice wingers.
Yeah, why didn't he play him to start off with?
I mean, it's got to do with fitness, it must be, but you know, at the time it was a frustrating concept, but actually I think in the long run it probably worked out for the best, and I'll tell you why in a minute.
Okay.
So we bring on Minta and Mitoma, and it makes such a difference straight away, but not just from an offensive point of view, from a defensive perspective, because they're both such high workers when it comes to getting back and defending and helping out their fullback. So different to the first half in that sense. What it did was it really stopped West Ham and blunted them most of the time. And they didn't really create too many chances from that moment. And the game ebbed and flowed. There wasn't too much going on. And then suddenly we made a couple of other substitutions. It got to about 81, 82 minutes. And then we took off Jack Inglewood. Yes, he looked tired, but again, as the point I was making earlier, he's such a pivotal player in that midfield. When you haven't got Belabor in there, you know, to really make sure you're keeping the ball. But we took him off and we brought on Gomez. Now, Gomez is a young player himself. Leggy, end-to-end player, but not the same player, you know, not the same type.
Different style.
Absolutely. Yeah, yeah. Brought on Gomez, brought on Gruder as well. O'Reilly came off, Gruder went on, in same, basically a swap, like for like. Mm. Literally 2 minutes later, Bowen again, picks up the ball on that right flank, comes in, and I have to be fair, absolute worldie of a cross. A fantastic.
He does that
cross.
So well. Oh, just, like, you can't give him the space.
No, it was a fantastic cross. Came back off his left foot, curled it in. And to be fair, if anyone touching that ball, it was going in the back of the net. It was one of those, you know, like even if Dunk had got to it, probably a good chance it might have got in the back of the net. Suchek found himself there to post, to score at the back post. And suddenly we're 2-1 down, 83 minutes. And quite rightly, Andy, I'm sure at Wembley, as you were saying, quite a few people jumping up and down.
Well, we were, yeah. I mean, from my perspective, I was at that point, I was looking at it thinking, this is going to help Palace finish above Brighton, especially if Palace start coming good now after, you know, the Arsenal game. And then, of course, my smugness got wiped off my face.
Well, I'm glad it bloody did, I'll tell you that.
But you left it late.
We did, didn't we? We like a late show. So, at the moment where that goal went in, very much like the Leicester game, I started to wonder if this would be the same again, you know, with the players not having the ability to cope with the situation. This time was worse too, because last time this was for a draw. This time we've gone 2-1 down, we're losing. You know, we need two goals if we've got an outside chance of trying to get Europe and keep this, you know, keep us into our season. And I suppose that's the point, that maybe the players realise that, I'm not sure. But there were three things that I noticed at that point. First one, the crowd.
Okay.
We were slightly different. So unlike the Leicester game where the air got toxic, this time the fans got quiet for a moment, but then started chanting and encouraging. Second of all, the players themselves, they didn't hide. They actually wanted the ball. And I think what helped was we had Mitoma on the pitch rather than tired and subbed off. We had Minter on the pitch rather than tired and subbed off. They weren't rushed in most part. They took their time. Yes, there was a few moments where they thought they were trying to rush around to score a goal. But generally speaking, they took their time. They kept to their way of playing. And then there was also one tactical change as well, which I noticed, which was Hörsler decided to swap the wingers over. And what I mean by that is Mitoma went on to the right, Minte onto the left. With the midfielders trying to join the attack, what that did was it kept the width completely. The wingers weren't cutting inside.
Yeah.
They kept the width because West Ham had a five and a four defending. So it made that West Ham have to spread out. So it kept, and they kept the ball moving across, 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 across. They put more crosses in that last 10 minutes probably than they had done in the last 5 weeks, I would say.
It's a really clever move, that, from the manager.
I mean, it's an old-fashioned move, but it makes sense. It's why back in the 80s, 90s, people played on the, you know, this inverted winger is a relatively new thing in football. Mm. Yeah, went back in time a little bit, played the wingers on the right side, as it were, and we looked like we were going to create chances, and we did create chances. And I think a special note for Brian Gruder, he hasn't had too many opportunities this season. He's come on in the 10 position and ended up with two assists in that last 10 minutes. He's worked really hard. He's moved the defence around by his runs. And one of those runs causes an overload on the right-hand side, which actually ends up with the cross coming over to him. He heads the ball over and Matoma puts it in the back of the net to equalise. And that was the 89th minute. Now, at that point, obviously, tails are up, you want to go for it. But there's also a part of your head that's going, yeah, but I've seen this before and we've let late goals in, the Wolves game being the ultimate one where we were trying to score another goal and suddenly they come back and score a goal, you know, in the last seconds of the game. So do you stick or twist? What do you do? Well, Fabian Hürsler, he never sticks. He always goes for it. And to be fair, the team went for it. And we had another couple of shots. We had another three or four corners. So the fourth official puts up the time remaining and he says 3 minutes. Mm. 3 minutes. And we were like, well, you know, a point's okay, but I don't think that really helps us with the rest of the season that we've
got. 3 minutes to keep your European dream alive, Neil. That's how close it came.
Yeah, I know.
3 minutes.
But the positive thing was, very much like the Fulham game earlier in the season, we kept going. We didn't become desperate. We kept our shape. We had the wingers putting the ball across. We kept going. We had a few corners in that time as well. And one of those crosses from Mintebian on the left was flashed across and it came out to the other side to where Brian Gruder was. He picked up the ball and passes it to Carlos Baleba. Oh. Now, I have to be honest, with 64 seconds remaining in added time, when he hit that ball, as you can imagine, it's like when a penalty or something happens. There's screaming, but there's also a moment of silence. He hits the ball and just for a split second, there's a complete... And then the whole place... It was the release of pressure, I suppose, when that goal went in. It was like Mentos in a Coke bottle. It was a volcanic eruption of joy, Andy. That's what it was.
Yes, Neil. Do you know what? I can imagine it. And also, I think... It was a superb, pains me to say it, was a superb goal.
Yeah,
it was a really, really good goal. One of my favourite moments of watching the highlights of that game was, did you see the keeper after he scored it?
Yeah.
Just brilliant. He just stood there with his legs apart and his arms down and he watches it go past him. And then he finally manages to pluck up some kind of energy to lift his hands up to kind of, like, obviously you can't see what I'm doing here, but he's kind of got his hands up in the air as if he's kind of some kind of praying thing to the gods. And just like, what on earth? And at that exact point, he lifts his arms up. Three of their defence dropped to the floor as if like, wow, what's happened here? And obviously West Ham ain't having a great time, but just brilliant.
It was a great moment. And, you know, part of the reason the keeper didn't move was because they had so many players behind the ball. He didn't even see it until it was too late, you know, and half of that is their fault in some respects. You know, if they decide to put a brick wall up, well, if they leave a hole, I mean, to be fair, when you saw the angle from behind the goal, for the other goal, you could see how much it curled. I mean, it was just a fantastic finish, full stop.
Even if he had moved, Neil, he wouldn't have got anywhere near that. It's one of them goals that, it's going to be remembered, that one.
Yeah.
Fair play.
Absolutely. And I wonder, just as a closing point, I wonder how important that last 10 minutes on Saturday will prove to be come the end of the season with people's mentality and just everything that encapsulated. I really hope it means something.
Well, do you know what? It means something right now, Neil, because today marks an important milestone in our podcasting career. Because, believe it or not, episode 4 now. Today marks the first podcast where you can celebrate a Brighton win. So...
Oh, my God.
I don't know if we've got any celebration music to play.
I can't believe you're right.
To let off or something. but I've sat here for the last 3 weeks and listened to what can only be described as misery from you and despair. And it's nice to see a smile on your face today, albeit a very late goal. But that means a lot to you. And it's kept the Brighton dreams alive and potentially kept this podcast on the tracks.
Thank you, Andy. I appreciate your sportsman and kind words. On that note, I think we'll take a break and then come back and hear all about Andy's special day out at Wembley. Welcome back to Seagull Eagle Podcast. I don't think I can put it off any longer, Andy. I think it's time. It's time to hear all about your lovely day out at Wembley Stadium on Saturday.
Oh, Neil, what a day it was. Do you know, I literally restrained myself from turning up here with my flag and in full Palace kit.
Oh, you should
presented
have.
You with the programme. I could have done it all. In fact, I was saying to you earlier, wasn't I, that my son Harry, who came with me, he's had a lovely week, and he said to me the other day, he bought a flag from Wembley, massive 1 metre flag on a big stick. And he was going to wave it at your camera outside your driveway yesterday. So I restrained him from doing that.
Well, I appreciate that. I do. Yeah. I also appreciate the braveness. And, you know, that's what it's about, isn't it? Rivalry.
Absolutely.
That's what everything's about in that sense with the sport. And I'm here for it, mate. It's not a problem.
Well, Brighton fans, please, I apologise, because you will have your moments genuinely going forward in this podcast. And I apologise for this, but we have to talk about Palace Villa. FA Cup semi-final at Wembley. First thing I want to talk about is the atmosphere, because it was quite something. Even outside of the stadium, from the early morning, Palace fans were everywhere. I wasn't there, however, on socials and across the internet, there's loads of images about the Covent Garden takeover, which was very well advertised. And it was just a sea of red and blue there, singing and chanting. Palace took over the streets. Pure joy, excitement, all of it was happening everywhere. And it was actually really well organised from the Palace fans. This is what happens when it doesn't happen often. Yeah. Everyone kicked into overdrive and was organised and everything.
It was interesting, actually, because across the socials, I felt like there was more Palace fans than Villa fans. I mean, there wasn't, obviously. You know, they were the same number, but you know what I mean? Like, it just felt like Palace were just more up for it.
Oh, absolutely. Look, the build-up around Wembley was electric. Waves of Palace fans pouring in, flags draped over their shoulders, scarves held high. There really was a special buzz outside that stadium. And the kind of buzz you only get when, truthfully, something potentially special is about to happen, and you really hope that that is the case. Also, what I loved, without getting too deep into this, was I've been talking to people that I would never talk to. I was sat there having a conversation. I go to Selhurst Park every week, and there's this guy who sits next to me, and all we've exchanged, all right, you know, hello again. Bye. That's pretty much it. And I've sat next to him 20 odd times.
Yeah.
Now, at Wembley, immediate full-blown conversation with everybody around us. Isn't this exciting? What an atmosphere. Have you been here before? You know, isn't it a great day out for the kids? All of that. I think it's kind of opened up this just wonderful day of excitement for everybody. 35,500 Palace fans. Man City fans, listen up carefully, because I don't think you quite bought that many people on Sunday. 35,500 Palace fans, absolutely packed in our end. An endless wall of red and blue, and everyone was really up for the day. The noise was on another level. It was amazing. For me and my son, Harry, it was an unforgettable day. As I said to you in the bonus pod when we were talking about the build-up to this, it was our first trip to Wembley together, our first time feeling that volume, that passion and that togetherness.
Yeah.
First time my son's been in a stadium of that size. I mean, just walking through to see his face was amazing. Seeing his face as the crowd roared and the flags waved, like, I know I'm getting emotional here, but it really is a memory that I certainly will never forget. It's something a dad always wants to do with their kid.
Absolutely.
Take them to Wembley to see their team.
Or a mum.
I can only speak from a dad's point of view, though, of course. So the game. Right, opening 10 minutes, both teams were politely passing sideways like a chess match for me, really. There was a little bit of a nervousness, but it didn't really show too much. But no one really showed their hand, I don't think, in the first 10 minutes. Then we had our first chance. Mateta, in essence, bullies Konsa, scores, but the ref says, no fun allowed here.
Mm.
As the Palace fans are going absolutely mad. He rules it out. Now, looking back at it, and funny enough, the first thing that my family said to me as I walked through the door, they were like, they should never have ruled out that first goal. And I was like, it doesn't matter. However, if it had come down to it, I would have been livid because actually, I think it was an absolute fair challenge.
It was a very, very strange situation. And it's we're back at that same place again at the beginning of the season where the whole referee's decision, unless it's absolutely horrendous, that they stick with it. And I don't think they've got the margins right.
Nah. But anyway, we won't worry about that because instead of talking about the first chance, let's talk about the first goal. 31 minutes. Eze with an absolute thunderbolt. Saar teed up Eze beautifully, and Eze just strikes it straight into the top bins. I've watched it over and over again on repeat. Martinez, he tried, bless him, but he got nowhere near it.
I mean, I don't think, to be fair, I know you're a bit biased. I don't think it was top bins. It was straight down the middle, but really hard and up high. I was expecting Martinez to get something on it because he's a great keeper. But yeah, you're right. Like, he just couldn't touch it. It was just so quick. It was past him.
Yeah, it really was. And when Eze smashed it in, at that point, we were still kind of inwardly reeling from the Mateta moment, thinking, is it going to be one of these games, right? This is the talking point that we're all going to talk about forever. And it happened. And there was that little moment of silence where, and I think what completely and utterly kind of threw me was that Eze kind of just stood there.
Mm.
And because he just stood there, I was like, and then all of a sudden it erupted and I jumped up like an overexcited toddler, Neil, so high. I was sat on the end seat next to some steps. And I jumped up so high that I nearly launched myself down the entire terrace of steps, like a rogue shopping trolley or something. I just don't understand what happened. All I do remember is at the end of it thinking, I nearly died. However, it did not matter. So far, an absolute fairy tale. Mitchell then missed from about 4 inches, somehow kicking absolute fresh air. The more you replay that, the more he will never want to see that again. However, he's forgiven and we move on. Do not worry. Mitchell's another fine example of someone who gets himself into some wonderful positions, but potentially shouldn't be there when it comes to actually making that final shot.
I think that's the thing, though, isn't it? With playing that formation and having wing-backs, the dilemma is always, do you have a defender or do you have an attacker on the wing?
Mm.
You know? And I think sometimes it works one way or the other, and it's very rare to find a player that can do both. So Tarek Mitchell, he's a left-back. He's playing wing-back. You get what you're given in that sense. He's doing well. But
he's doing really well.
It was just a moment that just didn't quite work for him.
No, absolutely. And you're right, it's absolutely tricky. So then for Villa at that point, a couple of headers, Henderson caught them like he was plucking apples off a tree, Neil. It looks like Henderson, it didn't matter what was coming his way, he was in the zone.
Yeah.
Right. He's been there a few times, obviously, with Manu. He's been there with England. So, yeah, I think he felt quite comfortable. He was having the game of his life, and this was only the start of it. So then we go in at halftime. The second half happens. Villa started fast.
Mm.
Henderson tips a McGinn volley over like it's nothing again, and that should have probably been a goal. But no, Henderson wasn't having any of it. Mm. Another worldy save. Then comes the penalty. Now, this is a really interesting situation. So Eze got brought down, Palace penalty. At that point, where I was sat, kind of at one of the corner flags, really, kind of looking down, everyone around me was like, we knew it was going to VAR, and we all thought, no chance.
Mm.
What did we know? From the angle we were at, it didn't look like, it looked like he'd made the most of it, actually. When you look at it from the other angle, okay, do you know what? I wouldn't say clear-cut penalty, but there wasn't enough.
It's another one, isn't
exactly.
It? It's
that
situation again.
So at this point, really funny, because the people that we were sat next to, the bloke had obviously been at Covent Garden and everywhere else, by the look of it, for the last 3 days. And at this point, he decides, just before the penalty's awarded, that he needs to go to toilet because he's about to wee himself. So he gets up and goes to toilet just before the penalty, which is the strangest decision I've ever seen in my life.
Just to be clear, he goes for a wee when he knows there's going to be a penalty. The penalty's given.
Well, he thinks that VAR is going to take that long that he can get back in time, right? So this is what happens. So he's gone. Just bear that in mind. So then penalty's awarded. We're all like, oh, hang on a minute.
Mm-hmm.
I'm ready. And I make sure that I'm positioned correctly this time to jump up so I don't fall down the steps. Mateta steps up. I then jump up to celebrate, thinking he scored, because the angle I'm at is the opposite side to where he shoots it.
Right.
And then I realise, after celebrating hard, like half of the stadium did, because they didn't see it properly, that it actually bounced off the advertising boards. An embarrassing moment for me, a little bit embarrassing for Mateta. However, not quite as embarrassing as Eze's penalty from the previous week. So then Sarr decides enough is enough at that point. And this is where the mental side of the game comes in, right? You've just missed a penalty, FA Cup semi-final, everyone in the world's watching. That's where the game can turn. And normally for us, where it could mentally turn. Sarr decides enough is enough, and he smashes one from downtown into the bottom corner from absolutely nowhere. Palace are 2-0 up. At this point, Neil, my mate who spent the morning at Covent Garden and the previous 3 days drinking at this point, he's come back from his wee and he's thinking everyone's celebrating the penalty. He's completely oblivious that we missed the penalty and that Sarr, it's happened that quick. That's what's happened. That's how long it took him to have a wee. Yeah. I mean, that's how much he drunk. Anyway, we won't focus on his toilet habits.
Please not.
But at this point, 2-0 up, Wembley enters full on carnival mode. It's too good to be true, right?
It's interesting, isn't it? Because, you know, you get to Wembley, you get to a semi-final, you're expecting a tense affair. And I'm sure it was tense, but to be 2 up, I mean, that's a pretty comfortable position to be in some respects. You can feel quite happy to be in that position.
Well, yeah. But also, there's this, being a Palace supporter, Neil, it doesn't matter if you're 3-0 up or 4-0 up, you're still, and I don't know whether Brighton, you still have that. It's that kind of ingrained from me as a child.
Yeah.
You're just thinking that you're going to go down to that 10-man defence again and just let them come at you for the rest of it.
Yeah.
But obviously, that's not how we do it these days. Anyway, for the final 10 minutes then, Villa threw on everything.
Yeah.
Bailey, Tielemans, and even the kitchen sink, but nothing stuck from my perspective. Mateta defending like a man possessed. Yes, defending like a man possessed. Forget being a striker. Give him a number 5 shirt. He was brilliant all over the park. 90 minutes approaches and the board is raised. And this was probably the biggest shock of it, that somehow they managed to add 7 minutes onto that game.
Mm.
I don't believe that VAR was 7 minutes. But anyway, it doesn't matter. Now, Sarr then strikes again in the 95th minute. And at this point, I do feel sorry for Sarr because Eze had already been announced in the stadium as the man of the match. Quite rightly at that point.
Yeah.
And then, of course, Nketiah, who comes on for Mateta, intercepts the ball brilliantly, doing what we do, pressing high. And there's that thing that we do where you go from one attacker to 3 attackers and kind of just overload that defence at the back, which is why we kept that pressure on them defence and kind of made them really shaky. And obviously, when he intercepted that ball and played a beautiful pass through, Sarr goes full-on roadrunner and slots it past Martinez. And obviously, game, set, match, right? 3-0. And let's be honest, even Eze in the post-match interview basically said to everybody that he was going to give him the trophy, is what he said, because he was like, I don't deserve this now. This is his game.
Yeah. All rivalry aside, Andy, I think, trying to be as fair as I can, it was a really good performance from Crystal Palace.
Mm.
When you look at how the game played out, I don't think your manager would be any more happy to say that this was exactly how he wanted it to be.
Mm-hmm.
Sitting back a little bit, making sure that they were not broken into. When they'd had the opportunity, they would go. You know, I think they played something like 106 long passes in the game. The tactic was there. Use the pace, use Mateta, get over the top of Villa. Yeah, I think Villa ended up with 70% possession.
They did, yeah.
And that's a huge amount for any game, let alone an FA Cup semi-final, and to not win.
It didn't feel like 70% possession from Villa, though, which was interesting. I was shocked when I saw that stat.
But I think that's because of the quality of the attack. So when Palace had the ball, they made it count.
Yeah.
I think we're seeing this generally, I won't get into the whole thing now, but we're seeing that across the board now in football. Possession isn't anymore as important as it used to be.
Doesn't win you games.
No, exactly. Villa had 16 shots, as you quite rightly point out. They threw the kitchen sink. No goals, though, from 16 shots is, you know, it's just not good enough. They didn't quite look themselves, Villa. Usually they're a little bit more decisive, a little bit more knife through butter. You know, they go straight for the jugular. Just didn't quite look themselves. A few players missing. But generally speaking, I'm not going to take anything away from Palace. They were very, very good. And at the end of the day, they deserve to go through to the final.
Thank you, Neil. And I think, look, Palace just wanted it more.
Yeah,
you could just see, like, the intensity of the play, the winning of the second balls in midfield, the snatching of the ball across the pitch. And just, I felt like Villa just didn't, we made them uncomfortable because they didn't feel like they had any space to play in.
Well, I mean, you alluded to it last week in the pod as well, saying, like, you know, you've had a good season against Villa.
Oh.
You know, and now you add this to it. I mean, what are the stats now for this season?
Well, 1-3, drawn 1
yeah.
against Villa this year. We've scored 11 goals against them.
There you go.
It's embarrassing.
Yeah.
And one thing that I did, I know I don't want to kind of make this whole pod into this game, but one funny thing that I did.
Really?
See,
are you sure
I
you
really
don't?
Really? Honestly. Glasner's celebration.
Oh, that was brilliant. That was comedy gold.
I missed this.
Did you?
I missed it.
Yeah.
I mean, you know what it's like at Wembley.
Of course.
It's really hard to see the detail of the game. But when he ran out of the technical box to celebrate with the players and then realised mid-jump that he was already on a yellow card from the previous game for doing exactly the same thing and literally mid-celebration, literally went from smiley face celebration to sensible, looked at the fourth official and calmly walked back and went, sorry, to avoid the yellow card.
You know, I mean, it's fantastic in some respects because it's about having that understanding of the situation. It shows what a cool manager he is in some respects. You know, he'll be fantastic at Spurs next season.
No way, mate. No way. Because do you know what he's going to be doing? He's going to be playing in Europe with Palace.
Oh.
That's what he's going to be doing. And he's going to get exactly what he wanted to achieve.
Well.
So, look, to summarise, Palace players, they wanted it more. They were pressing with intensity, challenging for every ball and working hard. Glasner, tactical genius. Palace fans still singing 3 hours later, still losing their voices, still smiling like lottery winners. Me and my son, first Wembley trip, first FA Cup semi-final, first dose of full-blown Palace magic. Next stop, Neil, Wembley for the final.
And as you said, possible European football. All
Best
they've
chance.
Got, all they've got to do now is beat the other finalists in the final. Now, who made it through? I'm trying to just, let me just check. Semi-final to Sunday. Nottingham Forest, they lost to another team. Oh, Manchester City.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm not scared of them.
Oh, hello. Fight and talk.
I'm not. Honestly, if we play like we did on Saturday against that Man City team that I saw play against Forest on Sunday, we've got nothing to be scared of.
And if you play like you did against Manchester City the previous Saturday...
Well, look, we went 2-0 up against them. We've just got to make sure that we don't do the other bit. Look, Glasner said at the end of the Man City game, he whispered in Pep's ear and said, "You got me this time, but you won't get us again." And he knew potentially we'd be meeting them in the final. So it's a grudge match. And do you know what? The one thing, I know we'll talk about the game now, but the one thing I got out of that game actually, and it wasn't just me that said it, it was the other people I was watching it with.
The other semi-final you're talking about?
Yeah, the other semi-final. Mm. It didn't look Man City was celebrating the win at the end.
No.
It didn't look like they cared that much, or their fans cared that much even, about the win. Like, you compare the glory of Palace winning that semi-final and the passion and the way that had been built up, Man City were just going through this normal process of it's another time at Wembley. And look, and that comes with the stature of Man City, right? I just think that put Palace on form, hopefully, against that team, Palace are going to want it more.
I understand the point. I really do. And I think what you've got to think about with Man City is, you're right, they didn't celebrate because they're running on fear. So they're having to win this.
Yeah.
They've got to win the FA Cup to have a trophy. You know, when you think about how good this Manchester City have been over the last six, seven, eight seasons, to not win a trophy, Pep hasn't done that since his very first season.
Mm.
So they've got to win a trophy, really. That is just the norm. This is the only opportunity they have. And I know what you're saying, that they didn't celebrate it. I looked at it a little bit differently. I looked at it at that. They were just focused. They knew they had to win. Job done. Move on. Let's get to the final. And I think they're going to be used to that environment.
Oh, they will.
They'll be comfortable. Pep will possibly do the one thing, though, that he's known for doing in finals and last important games, which is overthink it and possibly make a change that he doesn't need to do. And if that happens, you're quite right that Glasner has proven so far this season that he's a tactician, that he understands the game, that he, of course, understands the game, but that he understands sometimes that things need to change and there are different ways to win a football match. Prove that in the semi-final. He's got Man City. It will be tough, but anything can happen in a final, Andy.
And anything can happen in the FA Cup. It's on the day what will happen. We will find out. But do we fear them? I don't think we do, because I think that as long as we turn up on that day, we've got a chance.
I'll tell you what we'll do. We'll put a pin in that, because I think this needs a bonus pod nearer the FA Cup final. Oh, God, I can't believe I'm saying that. Oh, look.
I mean, you don't have to ask me twice.
Right, yeah, I'm sure. Let's put a pin in it. Let's move on. Let's have a quick squiz through the other games happening this weekend in the Premier League.
Right, here we go. Chelsea 1, Everton 0. So, yeah, I mean, look, Nicholas Jackson back on the score sheet after 13.
Ooh, I am for real. Love that song.
I didn't know what was happening then.
Do you know? I love that song.
13 matches, goalless, and he scored. So fair play to him. Chelsea were the better side. Everton sitting in the last bit of the game. Unlucky, I thought, really, not to get a point, actually.
Yeah, no, it was unlucky in the end. I mean, the last sort of 10, 15 minutes, they opened up a bit and tried to score a goal. They had close moments, but I mean, end of the day, Chelsea win, boring. Let's move on.
Exactly. Newcastle 3, Ipswich 0. So Isak's goal nil means that he now moves ahead of Haaland in the most goals scored, just behind Salah. So he is on fire. He's got 22 goals, which is now level with Shearer's Newcastle record in 2003. So he's only got to get another one. And then he's surpass Shearer. I mean, that surpass Shearer in anything, right?
Yeah, I know. I agree. He's had a fantastic season. He's had a fantastic couple of seasons. And, you know, they're in fantastic form. I just do worry a little bit about the next game they've got. You know, they could come a crumble at the mighty Brighton Hove Albion. We'll have to see. But let's talk about that in part three.
Yeah, and obviously Ipswich defeat means that it's the first time in Premier League history that all relegations have been confirmed with four games to go.
Yeah, it's been a poor turnout, let's be honest.
Really poor.
It'll be interesting to see what happens next season. Let's talk about that also in part three.
Absolutely. Southampton 1, Fulham 2. Now, this one does affect what happens with us potentially and Europe. What are your views on this?
Obviously, it was on at the same time as I was at the Amex watching Brighton. So you got the half-time score and Southampton are one up. And to be honest, none of us were holding out much hope because it's Southampton. And after about an hour or so, it was still 1-0. And I didn't bother looking anymore because I was too concentrated and worried about what Albion were doing.
Yeah.
So it wasn't until full-time that I saw the result. Having seen some of the highlights, I mean, Fulham had an off day. They left it late. And I think it was something like the 92nd minute that Ryan Sessegnon put the ball in the back of net, which I think was only about 5 minutes. I think it was 7 minutes of injury time. So literally like 5 minutes to go, they scored that goal. And they got out of jail. They had a bad day at the office and they still managed to win, which is very frustrating, I think, for both of us, really, in that sense.
Yeah. And of course, without willing to pile on the woes for Southampton.
No, you can.
It's still fine. Sat on 11 points. So just four games to go now to move above Derby as the worst team ever. Come on, Southampton. You can get a point. Don't go down in history as the worst team ever. Right, moving on now. Wolves 3, Leicester 0. The woes continue for Leicester. Wolves, what's happened there?
Yeah.
If you look at their form guide, they're probably now one of the most in-form sides in the, I mean, I think it's all green.
I think they are.
Six consecutive wins for Wolves. Yeah. And obviously, Vardy, bless him, had his penalty saved in that game as well. And he's confirmed that he's now leaving Leicester at the end of the season. And I heard, actually, just before I came over here tonight, they were saying that he said that he wants to not drop down to the Championship next season and continue at a Premier League club.
Really? Premier League club? Well, he might turn up at one of the newly promoted teams then. Let's see.
Yeah. But the manager's doing a brilliant job at Wolves. They were second bottom when he took over. Second bottom. Mm. And now 10 league wins and 32 points. 32 points from 18 games. That's phenomenal.
It is, yeah. The most important part of all of this was the first three or four games, because that's when the pressure was really on.
Yeah.
That's when they were really worried about what was going to happen. He came in and the first thing he did was he steadied the ship. He stopped the goals getting in. And I think, you know, that's the first thing that the good old-fashioned managers used to do. They used to steady the ship, not worry about doing anything else, just stop the goals going in. And I think there were a few quite boring games at the beginning while he was implementing what he wanted to do. But now, I mean, they're absolutely flying. I'm just so pleased Brighton don't have to play them.
Yeah.
Oh, hang on.
However, do you know, I mean, a quick question before we move on. Do you think that he's done a brilliant job, or do you think that they were just massively underperforming beforehand? They already had that squad and they had everything they needed, but it just wasn't quite working. Because I kind of think the latter.
I think it's probably, like most things, I think it's probably a little bit of both. He's found a way of playing that fits the players. Mm. And I would have to make a little point, which is Strand Larsen, the striker who they signed at the beginning of the season, you know, he's turning out to be quite a buy now, quite a purchase. Yeah. I mean, he did okay at the beginning of the season. But again, in a team that's firing now, he's turning up. And obviously, we know what Cunha's like anyway. But, you know, I don't expect him to be there next season. But Strand Larsen, somebody up front that can put the ball in the back of net, that's always going to help.
They just left their charge for Europe a bit late, haven't they? But there we go. Bournemouth 1, Man United 1.
I've never felt happier for a Manchester United goal in my life, I tell you. I felt dirty wanting Manchester United to score. Yeah, so Bournemouth took the lead. And I mean, the game was relatively even, to be fair. I mean, although I think the stats were something like, you know, Manchester United again having the majority of the ball. But I think the way Bournemouth play, as we know, you know, they're so rip-roaring and fast on the attack. It was a relatively even game until that moment in the second half. So Bournemouth are one up. And I think it's Evan Nielsen gets a red card for a tackle.
It's a controversial one.
Yeah, it was on Mazraoui. And I can't believe that's a red card. And I think it's another one of those instances where you suddenly look at it on TV and rewind it a few times and it looks so much worse than it actually was. To me, I just don't see that as a red card. You can see what the players, Evan Nielsen's trying to do. He's going in for the tackle. He moves so fast that he slips over. Some people will say he's out of control. I understand that. But realistically, guys, it's a contact sport and I just don't see that as a red. What do you think?
I was listening to it on the radio while I was doing some decorating, actually, Neil.
Lovely.
My view from what I heard was exactly the same, that he was out of control. What else could he have done in that situation? Yeah. So anyway, we'll move on because once again, we've spoken too long about Man United. So we've got Forest Brentford on Thursday coming up later on in the week, an important game for us, both of us for Europe. So we'll see how that one goes next time we speak as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Talking of sort of those European positions, and obviously we had our predictions that we thought were going to happen over the next few weeks and where everyone was going to finish. So where does that currently leave all those teams that we talked about from that sort of 8th to 12th position? Should we go through it just to make sure that we're all clear on it?
Something tells me, Neil, that you've been doing all right with your predictions so far.
Well, I mean, I've done all right this week. I got 4 out of 4. Not that there's anything on it particularly, but I thought when we look at the league positions, they've gone how I expected to, let's at least say that. So everyone's played 34 apart from Brentford, who obviously I think play... Did you say Thursday, did you say?
Yeah, they play Thursday, and I think they're the ones that we differ on, Brentford's success, actually.
Right.
So Thursday's going to be key.
So we've got Fulham in 8th on 51 points, but Brighton also on 51, just 3 goals difference. 10th Bournemouth, 50 points. 11th, 46 points is Brentford, but that, with that game in hand until Thursday. And then who is 12th? Let me just scroll down to 12th. Oh, Crystal Palace, 12th.
Also in the FA Cup final. With our best chance for Europe.
Moving on.
It's now time to look at what's happening in the news and current affairs that happened this week in the Premier League. One thing we didn't talk about in the last section was Liverpool's win against Tottenham. 5-1. Obviously, they went 1-0 down, ended up winning 5-1. Everyone was thinking there was going to be a bit of an upset and they were going to have to wait another week.
But then they realised it was Spurs.
And of course, Liverpool are crowned champions. So whilst we do not tend to overly talk and celebrate the top six in this podcast, because everybody else does, I think we can't not discuss this because they've won the league.
Absolutely. No, that's only fair. Fantastic moment for Liverpool. The writing's been on the wall for a few weeks, obviously. You know, they've been champions in waiting, really. They've played like champions all season, let's be fair. I think they've only lost twice all season. So any team that can do that is pretty good from my point of view.
It's phenomenal. I mean, look, they've drawn level with Man United now on 20 titles. It's the first time they're going to be able to celebrate a title win in front of their own fans since 1990. They last lifted the trophy behind closed doors at Anfield in 2020 during the COVID pandemic.
Absolutely.
So people weren't allowed to celebrate really then. One thing I did want to talk about was a story that I've seen across all the socials and in the news, which was, have you seen about the flares situation?
This is comedy gold.
It's brilliant.
It's such a clever idea. You tell them.
Well, rumour has it that some of the Everton fans basically bought up a stock amount of blue flares and changed the label on these blue flares to say red flares. They then resold them and the Liverpool fans bought them as red flares, only to find out they were blue flares when they let them off as part of the parade or in the stadium. And there's been many a photo or video showing said blue flares being let off in the middle of the crowd.
It's so good. I mean, there's one particular video that I've seen where this guy, proud as punch, is walking through and then lets off his flare. He's holding it above his head. So for about a second or two, he doesn't even realise the colour that's coming out.
Brilliant.
And then he looks up because he hears people booing. So there's actually people booing him. And he's going, oh, no, it's blue. Oh, and it's just, he sort of pushes it down to the floor and tries to walk off. And everyone's just booing him already.
There's a brilliant one that I saw of actually in the stands as they were celebrating. And this guy lets off in this packed stadium, lets off this blue flare, realises, drops it on the ground, and then starts trying to waft it with his shirt. It's just brilliant. I mean, there's nothing you can do in that situation. Well done to Everton fans.
Yeah, well done.
One of your only reasons to celebrate this season.
Now, congratulations, Liverpool. Some fantastic players all the way through. Just proves what a great spine of a team they have in that sense. You know, with Alisson, Van Dijk, you could argue Alexis McAllister as well, the wonderful Alexis McAllister, who scored on Sunday too. And obviously Mohamed Salah up front as well.
Do you know Salah, by the way, just while you mention him? I don't want to talk about him too much because everybody is. But one thing that I didn't realise until I kind of just did a little bit of research on this, maybe I've been under a rock, but everyone knew that he was the top goal scorer, right? But
Sure. You
know that he's also top on the assist league as well. That's phenomenal stat. How'd you end up doing that?
Well, he's actually done it a couple of times now. I mean, Harry Kane did it about four seasons ago. If you look at the top assist goal scorers for the last five or six seasons, he's there or thereabouts on every list.
It's phenomenal. He's had 120 shots at goal with a 48% accuracy, and he's played every game this season.
Yeah. Well, yeah, newsflash, Mohamed Salah, he's pretty good.
He is. He really is.
Just mentioning Alexis McAllister for all the Albion fans.
Yep.
Great to see him do something like lifting a trophy like that. You know, obviously he lifted the biggest one of all when he was at Brighton of Albion, the World Cup. hey, have you got a World Cup winner?
No.
There you go.
No.
So it's great to see him. He scored a great goal on Sunday. And just a little side point, I'm quite, from what I understand, we do have a little Tony, Uncle Tony, again, clever little man that he is.
Oh, what's he done?
He's put a lovely little clause in McAllister's sale to mean that we get future funds if certain things happen. And one of those things were if Liverpool win the title. So a little bit more money coming Albion's way.
Brilliant. Well done.
Thanks, Uncle Tony.
He does all right, that bloke, for you, doesn't he? There you go.
What else have we got in the news this week?
Well, obviously, Liverpool have won it. Mm. However, we know now the three that have gone down were the three that came back up.
Sure.
So I guess let's have a look now, because this week it's been confirmed that Leeds and Burnley
sure.
have sealed promotion. Obviously, we don't know who's going to come up through the playoffs as of yet. Mm. But Leeds thrashed Stoke 6-0 on Easter Monday, meaning that they were promoted, and Burnley beat Sheffield United 2-1, which means that they now come up. There seems to be a little bit of a change in history in recent years. Maybe we can have a look at this at the end of the season, but of the teams that come up automatically go down, that never used to be the case.
No, I think there's an obvious answer to this, and that's money. That the funds that the Premier League give you in parachute payments, it helps keep you afloat because you've obviously got players maybe on higher wages. But what it also does for the next two or three seasons gives you a little bit more money than anyone else in the Championship. And lo and behold, we're starting to see, you know, apart from Ipswich, granted, but generally speaking, we're starting to see the same teams yo-yo. Norwich did it for quite a few seasons. Mm. But, you know, now we're starting to see Leicester, we're starting to see Southampton. This season, Burnley and Leeds, two teams that went down the previous season coming back up, or previous seasons coming back up. You know, and even if you look at the top sort of 10 teams in the league, the good thing is that you're starting to see other teams in that sort of 8th to 9th to 10th, 6th position. There's so many teams there that could come up that hopefully will mean we might get some new teams coming up. You know, first of all, congratulations to Burnley and Leeds. They were well ahead of the other teams.
Miles.
In two very different styles, let's be honest. Burnley not conceding any goals practically. I think they conceded half a goal all season. And Leeds conceding plenty of goals, but scoring lots of goals as well, you know. Two very different ways to get promotion, but they did it. So congratulations to them.
And then, of course, on the playoff places, as you said, you've got Sheffield United, who are there, who obviously are in third place right now, who are going to miss out, or have missed out on the automatic places, all the way down to, I believe, Blackburn. So you've got, like, Sheffield United, Sunderland, Bristol, Coventry, Middlesbrough, Millwall and Blackburn. God, let's hope Millwall don't come up. That would be awful.
What's the connection with you and Millwall, like Palace supporters? Are you...
We just hate them.
Do you?
Yeah.
Right, okay.
They're just very vicious.
I mean, they should be your rivals, shouldn't they? Are they not?
They are.
Okay, so they're your rivals as well as Albion.
We've got plenty, yeah. But Millwall aren't welcomed with open arms.
No, well, to be fair, they're not welcome any places. So.
Yeah.
Let's leave that there. I suppose the last thing we should probably talk about is the games that we've got coming up, Palace and Albion.
Mm. Should we start with yours then?
Yeah, okay. So we've got next Sunday, we've got the 2 p.m. kickoff on Sky. We've got to play the Geordies. We've got to play Newcastle. And
you're in so much trouble.
I know. Well, I knew this. If you go back to what we talked about when our predictions and things, I didn't expect us to get anything from this. So I'm not worried too much in that sense. I just hope it doesn't turn out to be anything too bad.
Well, I think Alan Shearer's not going to be happy after your game, because I think he might have lost a record by the time you finished.
I mean, what I would say is that we've got a pretty good record against Newcastle. We've played them... Well, I mean, if you think about the last sort of six fixtures, so the last three seasons in the Premier League, we've won two, drawn four, lost two. So it's pretty even across the board. You know, it generally ends up in a draw. Also, this season, we've already played them twice because we played them in the FA Cup, took to extra time at St James's. So we beat them twice at St James's this season. So of all the teams that Newcastle like playing, they don't necessarily like playing us.
And you are at home, right?
Exactly. And I mean, we've had a pretty good record against them at home. I think they've only beaten us once in the last four or five seasons at home. So although on paper it looks a hell of a problem, I'm hopeful. But as I said before, I'm not going to change my mind. I don't think we'll do it. If we can scrape a point somehow, I would be absolutely ecstatic. So
you
roll on.
You never know. You never know. You might have got your momentum after your epic win at West Ham.
We'll have to wait and see. Who have Palace got?
Well, we've got to wait all the way till next Monday, actually, for our next game.
The Monday night football.
We're Monday night football, because obviously we've been busy with the FA Cup and all the others. So they thought they'd give us a bit of a... Did I mention that? Bit of a rest. So we've got Forest, which... it's a tricky one. It's also a really tricky one to predict a game over a week away.
Yeah, I agree.
Obviously recording this on a Monday night currently, so it's a whole week away. Yeah, I think it's really difficult to say, but I predict a draw is the truth. Okay. I think if we can get a point out of this, then I think we'll be all right. If we play like we did on Saturday, then actually I think we might get a win. But I did say in our predictions that we were going to get a draw. I think Forest have potentially got a little bit more to play for than Palace in this game, which is why I was going a bit more for the draw over the win, especially after their disappointment on Sunday. I think that they are going to have a point to prove to their fans. Yeah. So what do you think, Neil?
I'm trying to remember what I said in the predictions. I'm pretty sure I said Forest would win that one. Mm. I just think it's good timing for Forest in that they've had that terrible result against Manchester City in the FA Cup. They've gone out, but they've got plenty of time to rest and recuperate and get their minds back on trying to qualify for the Champions League. The great thing about football is that when you're disappointed, there's always a next game, you know. And I think they've got a real opportunity to get Champions League. And ultimately, that would be a fantastic result for Nottingham Forest. So, I still think they'll be on it. And what will be the most interesting thing on the whole game, I think, is who will have the football. Because both teams don't want it. So when they kick off, are they just going to leave the ball in the middle and both teams just stand either side waiting for someone else to take it? It'll be interesting to watch.
Yeah, that's a really good point, actually. From a tactical perspective, what's going to happen? Let's find out. But as I say, for me, it's a little bit too far away to try and work out what's going on with that one. And that's a wrap for episode 4 of Seagull Eagle. Thanks for joining us, whether you're soaring high with Palace or swooping in from the Brighton end. We appreciate every single one of you. Don't forget to hit subscribe so you never miss an episode again. And follow us on TikTok, Facebook, Instagram and X for all the extra chaos. Got something to say? Good, we want to hear it. So drop us an email at seagulleaglepodcast@gmail.com. We'll be back soon with more banter, big opinions and even bigger meltdowns. Until next time, up the Eagles!
Seagulls!